Central Jersey Talk Radio, Central Jersey 1450, WCTC with the Restaurant Guys. Call them now at 732-545-9282. 732-545-9282.
Hello, everybody, and good morning. You are listening to the Restaurant Guys. I'm Mark Pascal here with Francis Schott. Together, we own Stage Left at Captain Lombardi Restaurants in New Brunswick, New Jersey. And we're here to give you the inside track on food, wine, and the finer things in life. You can listen to us every day from 11 to noon. Reach us through restaurantguysradio.com or download our podcasts on iTunes.
Good morning, Mark.
Morning, Francis.
How are you this morning?
Pretty sparkly.
You look pretty sparkly. We have a sparkly guest on later in the show. We have Audrey Saunders.
She's more bubbly than sparkly.
Yeah, I'm with you on that one. She owns the Pegu Club in New York City, which you've heard us talk about many times before. She's coming on to talk to us about cocktails. It's pretty much the center of gravity of the cocktail universe in New York City. Her place has been written about by everyone. You can get the little snacks you can get there. They're more than snacks, but a little light fare that you can get there. Even Frank Bruni, the New York Times restaurant critic, has written great things about the bar and the food. It's just really great. She's going to come.
She's also one of the many disciples of our friend Dale DeGroff.
And she has the history of the whole thing down, too. She's a real cocktail historian, and that's what she's known for. She's coming on a little later in the show. I had some cocktails recently, and I want to briefly touch on
a trend.
Yeah, it's a bit of a trend. I guess that's what you could call it.
Are you working on that stutter?
I was on for a radio guy. It's not so good to have a stutter. When I worked recently the Share Our Strength benefit in New York City. It was great. And I had the opportunity to taste cocktails. I had the opportunity recently to taste a number of interesting cocktails that are a little less traditional. And
I was going to say, Francis, you have that opportunity every day. And
it's true.
Usually you take advantage
of it. It's a glorious part of my life. But I had the opportunity to taste some unusual cocktails recently. There are a couple of guys, oddly enough, both named Eben, who are doing cocktails in the way that, say, Ferran Adria is doing food in Barcelona.
They've got to be related.
No, they're not related. The first name is Eben.
I know.
Eben Freeman and Eben Clem, two important cocktailians and really pushing the envelope. And you know, as guys, that you got to respect them. And when we saw actually Eben Clem recently at the Museum of the American Cocktail event, he did a demonstration cocktail. The way that these people work with cocktails is they sort of deconstruct the cocktails the way that some avant-garde chefs are deconstructing food. And so here's it from an article from Peter Meehan where he talks about Eben Clem's, the House Manhattan at David Burke's Prime House in Chicago. The House Manhattan is made with leather-infused bourbon, sweet vermouth, and bitter spiked maraschino puree dropped into the drink as a liquid that coalesces into a gumdrop when it hits the side of the glass. Why do I want that? Okay, hold on. And to give you another example, Eben Freeman did a cocktail. He was with Wiley DeFrenz at WD50 in Manhattan, who's a chef who does a lot of avant-garde food here in Manhattan.
And I just want to say both of these guys are doing some really interesting stuff.
Absolutely.
They're doing some new stuff that hasn't been tried before. And I think they're pushing the envelope a little bit.
And I respect that. And I respect them for doing this. But I'm looking at what they're turning out. Here, where we talk about Eben Freeman and his work, he was originally at WD-50, but he likes to turn cocktails into papers and gels, kind of like Jell-O shots with a pedigree, and powders like a rum and coke made of rum powder from a flavoring company and soda-flavored Pop Rocks for fizz. Why do I want that?
Well, the problem with it, the way I see it is...
It's gross. It's not pleasant to drink. It's a chemistry experiment?
That's the second problem. The first problem, the way I see it, is it's kind of antithetical to what I'm looking for in a great cocktail or a great dinner. And what I'm looking for when I go for a great cocktail is I'm looking for real stuff in there. I'm looking for you know what I want, and you know what's been missing from the American cocktail from Sour Mix for the last 30 years? Well,
lemons.
Lemon and limes.
Yes, right.
Okay, so I want to. So as we, there's a movement now, more towards these, using real ingredients again, and using things that are true, and using things that are actual
I'll give you
flavors in nature. This whole cult of creating
avant-garde chemistry, cuisine.
chemistry experiments. I'm not digging so much.
Now here's the deal. I mean, I think there are two things that go on here. One is when a chef like Adria or Wiley, they take something and they sort of present it. Now, I'll give you their side of the argument that I've read a lot, and the best one that I can say. They say, well, listen, when a farmer feeds me food, I expect him to give me an apple and I'm happy with it. But when a chef gives me food, I expect him to do something with it. Now, okay, but I don't need you to make it into a powder, you know.
Right.
you know, but I accept that, and I think we need to congratulate these guys for being out there. But
and doing something completely new, because really there is this whole faction of people doing something.
But I'll tell you where it crosses over.
That's new.
I'll tell you where it crosses over for me into where I don't respect it. He talks about, this is in the Peter Meehan article in the New York Times on these scientific cocktails, about Evan Freeman's rum and coke from rum powder from a flavoring company.
Right.
And soda flavored Pop Rocks for fizz. Listen, that's crap any way you cut it. Okay,
right.
It's big agribusiness.
It's not bad enough that you're drinking Coke. Now you got to have fake Coke.
Right. It's just from a flavoring company. Is that where we want our food to come from?
Right, a big factory in Edison, New Jersey.
To hell with the flavoring companies. You know what I mean? That's for Burger King and McDonald's, and I wish that they would get away from the flavoring companies.
Right. One of the things I want to point out to a lot of the flavorings that are made in this country. Have you ever been to Elizabeth, New Jersey?
Yeah.
Do you know what Elizabeth, New Jersey?
Linden, I think.
Whatever. When you're driving down the turnpike and that bad smell.
Yeah, that's where it comes from.
That's
not where the smell comes from, but that's where the.
That's the factories.
That's who's producing
a lot of the flavors that
now we are not saying that the flavoring factories produce the bad smells, so you can't sue us. We're saying that in that smelly area of the state is where the flavoring comes from, not from a farm, and we don't like it. So I'll tell you, the deconstructed Cape Cod.
I mean, I want my apple flavor to come from, of all crazy, crazy things, an apple.
Well, I'll tell you, I had a drink made, a quote-unquote drink made by Evan Freeman. And again, I'm not knocking him. Okay.
You are knocking them
Well, I'm knocking for the flavoring company thing. That's Whole Foods, okay? Whole Foods, real foods, Whole Foods, foods from a farm, foods from people, not from flavoring companies. For that, I'll knock you. But
and remember, when we're talking about Whole Foods, we're not talking about, you know, you have to put an apple on the plate and eat an apple whole.
Right, but the apple flavor in your dish should come from a whole apple or an apple that you get, not apple powder from a flavoring company. And the drink that I had from him was, it was very, very interesting. There's this movement now where people make these fake caviars. They manipulate things so they become basically little caviar-sized little
pellets
that then pop in your mouth
pellets.
And release the flavor. So
I use the word pellets
when
I'm talking about what comes out of my rabbit, too.
Or a BB gun. But I went and I had Evan's Cape Cod, which is basically vodka and orange juice and a spoonful of little vodka and cranberry juice. It was a spoonful of little vodka and cranberry juice pellets. And again, my question is, it just simply wasn't as pleasant. It was interesting, but it wasn't as pleasant as drinking a vodka and cranberry juice.
Mm-hmm.
Vodka and cranberry juice isn't that interesting anyway. Why do I want it in pellets? And frankly, it seemed like there was a gelatin component, although I don't know how it was actually made. And gelatin added a little bitter quality to it. It wasn't fun to drink. Why was I doing it? To be different? Why do I care?
And what I find is, this stuff is interesting to me, but I want to try it once, and I never want to have it again.
But again, you know, you got to respect people that are out there on the cutting edge and pushing the envelope, and we do, but I just like this stuff to come from natural and real and historical sources, and we're going to be talking to a woman who makes cocktails in just that genre. Audrey Saunders from the Pago Club will be joining us in just a moment. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, Central Jersey, 1450. The time is 11:15. Hello, everybody, and welcome back. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, Mark and Francis of Stage Left and Cafe Lombardi Restaurants in downtown New Brunswick. Our guest today is a friend of ours. She's the High Priestess of Cocktails in New York. Audrey Saunders owns the Pegu Club, which you've heard us talk about many times on this show. Audrey, welcome to the show.
Hi, oh, good morning, my dear. Or good afternoon.
It's a little early. It's just after 11 o'clock. It's a little early for us cocktail and restaurant people, isn't it?
Yeah. I think we just crawled into bed a few hours ago.
Actually, Mark and I are in the studio still in our PJs.
I dig that.
Mark's got these little bear slippers that are really cute.
I was about
to
say, but I have some really cool PJs, so it's okay. Nobody noticed.
I do that when I work in service.
Now,
Argyle socks and all.
Now, I want to, this is a quote. This is from the Pete Wells article in Food and Wine, and I want your reaction to this. In her reverence for vintage cocktails, mixologist Audrey Saunders is part scholar, part priestess. Pete Wells visits her inner sanctum. What did Pete do in your inner sanctum there, Audrey?
We went through all five of Charles Baker's champagne opportunities, which is extraordinary. Yeah, and not only did we go through all five, we decided to go through one over and over and over until we felt it was perfected, and then we would only move on to the second one. So we probably went through about 30 trying to go through the five, but it was
but you
wonderful.
Lost count at 24 because you were so impaired.
It was now, a foggy night.
The beginning of your cocktail novel. Why don't you tell everybody about those books? Because that's one thing that, you know, it's funny. I found that old book many years ago, and I thought it was cool. And then you, of course, built a career on books like that. Tell us about the Wells book and
I can tell you. I mean, there are a couple of books out there. There's David Embury, who wrote The Fine Art of Mixing Drinks, and David Embury was not a bartender. He was actually an attorney. He lived up in Westchester, but he was just such a cocktail aficionado and really felt so strongly that the craft of the cocktail needed to be perfected, and just sat down and wrote this solid book. And that book is, I mean, so much to the degree. I mean, and this sounds, I mean, well, now we're going to really delve into the cocktail world, and I can tell you that there's like actually a subculture of people who refer to themselves as Emburians because they're like followers of what Mr. Embury has written.
But most of them are drunk, so we never get to
know that. Yeah, but they make a darn good cocktail.
Yeah, exactly. They're geeks just like the Star Wars fans, but they make better drinks.
Yes. And you know what? And you want a geek making your drink.
I'm not a Star Wars fan, though. I want a drink geek making my drink. Let me talk about Charles Baker.
Well, you know, it's interesting. Charles Baker is he brings the romance to the cocktail. Charles Baker was this extraordinary person who he worked for William Randolph Hearst, and he basically sailed the world on his yacht with his wife. They were bon vivants, and they wrote about their travels. And the first volume was called The Gentleman's Companion. There, it was a two-set volume. The first volume was on food, and the second one was on beverage, and it was just the prose that he used. He took you to Luxor, Egypt. He took you to, you know, he took you to Venezuela. He took you to the Panama Polo Club, and he just wrote about these cocktails that he experienced along the way. But he had such a romantic way of writing, and it inspires you. You can't, I mean, when somebody tells you about something that's called, a champagne opportunity not to be missed, I mean, how do you put that down?
You know, and his prose is, it's pretty pretentious. It's as if Thurston Howell III wrote a cocktail book.
You know, that's exactly it, but he could walk the talk. I mean, was extraordinary in the sense that, well, he wasn't just famous for those books. He actually wrote for both, Gourmet Magazine and Town and Country in the 40s.
Mm-hmm.
And I think Town and Country's Here's How column for a number of years, as well as being Gourmet's spirits editor. So if you've got those old issues, save them because they're certainly collector's items.
Well, and the thing is, most people out there don't have these old issues, and these books are out of print. It's a 1939 book. The food part of it is abominable. I read through the food part of it. It's because I happen to have it. I love this book, and it's to give you an idea of the prose style. He says the food book is entitled Part the First, being is concerning the art of fine cookery. It's like, okay, Mr. Howell, that's great.
You know that Francis loves these books because they're
why
all...
do you think I have deviled eggs on my menu?
And they're great, by the way.
Thank you, Francis. If you
borrow one of these books from Francis, they are all like torn and dog-eared and beat up from Francis leafing through them every other day.
Well, we have a couple of them behind the bar at Pago, so if anybody's interested, they can certainly take a peek. And you know, we actually, you know, it's interesting because The Gentleman's Companion, you can certainly go online on eBay and you can find them. The Gentleman's Companion is a lot more accessible than the South American Gentleman's Companion, which was his second two volume set that he wrote. But you know, absolutely anybody. And then there's the other one, actually. Jigger, Beaker, and Flask.
Mm-hmm.
So you can actually Google that one, and that one is actually a lot more accessible, and basically is the South American Gentleman's or the Gentleman's Companion. So, you know, so you can find them, and there was a reprint of it, so it is out there.
When, you know, when we talk about this stuff, as when we have a lot of cookbook authors on, that we're talking about is cookbooks are no longer just collections of recipes. They're contextualized, you know,
yeah.
and they give history, and it's sort of a why you're drinking it. And to look up Charles H. Baker's 1939 Cocktail Guide, The Gentleman's Companion, and buy an old copy of it, because there are a bunch out there. You have to buy it on eBay or something.
Yeah.
It will give you an idea of the romance that people like Audrey and you know, and like we have in our cocktail program, and what it is that we're looking for, cocktails and history. When we come back, we're going to talk with Audrey Saunders, who is a cocktail scholar about cocktails and history, and her club is the Pegu Club in New York City. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, Central Jersey, 1450. The time is 11:25.
The place, Brooklyn, New York, post-World War II. An Italian-American woman named Catherine Lombardi cooks for her family. What's so special about that? Well, lots. Food was central back then. Good food handed down from the traditions of two countries. Food that filled the whole house with the sweet smells of garlic, tomato, and basil. No matter when you stopped by or who you were sure to be fed and fussed over. Catherine showed her love on the plate and out of the pot. Any who were lucky enough to receive it never forgot. This is Mark Pascal from the Restaurant Guys radio show and Stage Left. I've just opened Catherine Lombardi Restaurant in New Brunswick, and its mission, to live up to the standards set by Catherine Lombardi. So come by the bar, sit by the fire. Have some fresh mozzarella and antipasto. The manicotti and tortelloni are amazing, and the veal chop will make you cry. Our wine list, of course, without parallel. We've got to live up to the standards set by Catherine Lombardi. You see, Catherine Lombardi was my grandmother. Come let me show you where I came from.
Catherine Lombardi Restaurant in New Brunswick, 732-296-9463 or CatherineLombardi.com. Hey, everybody. Welcome back. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys. Mark and Francis of Stage Left and Catherine Lombardi Restaurants. Our guest today is Audrey Saunders, cocktail historian, cocktailian, mixologist, and owner of the Pegu Club, which is, for as far as Mark and I are concerned, the center of gravity of cocktails in the Northeast right now.
Wow. Thank you. I think we're just geeks here, though.
Yeah, I never said you weren't. All those things don't count.
Oh, yeah, they kind of equal geek, yeah.
You know, it's funny, because earlier in the show you said that you really want a geek making your cocktail. But your bartenders are indeed kind of geeky in the way that they are historians at the same time as they're bartenders, and they're chefs at the same time that they're historians. And I think it's a really interesting combination of personality that you've got working behind your bar, and they just love to teach and talk about the history of what they're doing.
I think I have the most extraordinary bartenders in the planet back here. And the one thing, this was always the one thing that I envisioned, you know, before even Pegu. I mean, just the whole idea of opening a place, and I thought, you know, if I open a place, sorry, because that's my service entrance, and somebody's probably going to go pick up fruit.
No problem.
But they're artisan bartenders, and we're a very small community here in New York. The bartenders were hired months and months before we were open, and basically it wasn't even a formal process. We're, again, a small community. We really support each other. We hang out at each other's bars. We talk. We, you know, we create. We develop ideas. And basically when the idea for Pegu came around, you know, and I'd go to my friends' bars, and I'm like, you know, I'm working on this project. What do you think? And they're like, hey, you know, that's a really cool thing. You know, I'd love to be a part of it. So it was
they
really,
were right, by the way.
It was really like an
cool
invitation.
Thing.
It wasn't this thing. And I think that the really important thing that people don't do that really needs to be done is that if you hire, I see this in kitchens as well, and I fully respect the position of, like, the executive chef, you know, I mean, because there really does have to be somebody at the helm and ultimately say, you know what, this is great, let's run with this, or, you know, this needs work, or this should not be, or whatever. But I think that if you hire, I mean, for me anyway, hiring artisan bartenders, you have to, not only have to teach them and continue to, you know, support them and give them information, but you have to allow them to run with it.
Yeah. You know, I want to talk more about that in just a minute. We're going to take a short break for the news, but we'll be coming back and we'll be talking with Audrey Saunders, who is the, according to Pete Wells of Food & Wine magazine, a priestess of cocktails with her club in New York City. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, Central Jersey, 1450. The time is 11:30.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back. You are listening to The Restaurant Guys. I'm Mark Pascal here with Francis Schott. Together, we own Stage Left and Catherine Lombardi restaurants in New Brunswick, New Jersey. We're here to give you the inside track on food, wine, and the finer things in life.
You can listen to us every day from 11 to noon. Reach us through restaurantguysradio.com or download our podcast on iTunes.
We're talking today with Audrey Saunders, who owns the Pegu Club in New York City, which is our favorite cocktail bar in America. We were talking before about how you hire bartenders that are artisans, and I want to talk a little bit about being an artisan behind the bar and what exactly you mean about that. I mean, because we share a lot of ideas, and we both get a lot of our ideas came from the same source in Mr. Dale DeGroff, who's a mutual friend and mentor to you and me. When you talk about being an artisan bartender, give us some examples.
I think it really comes down to being passionate about what you do. And really putting your whole being into what you're doing and really love what you do.
But let's talk about the specifics, because I think that the people out there may not understand what an artisan bar is as opposed to just your generic New Jersey martini bar. I mean, talk about how you deal with the ginger ale. You needed a good ginger ale, a historic ginger ale, and ginger ale's not made like that anymore, so you went out and made your own.
Well, I don't make ginger ale, but I do make ginger beer. An artisan bar doesn't necessarily mean that, you know, you have to have 20 or 30 fruit purees behind the bar or that you need 80,000 ingredients. Basically, my bar consists of fresh fruit, you know, and that means like every single day we squeeze fresh lemon and lime juice. Every single day we squeeze fresh orange juice, fresh grapefruit juice. And I think when you work with just foundations like that, if you go back even 100 years, 150 years to cocktails, there was no premix, there was no, pre-flavored, and everything was prepared from scratch.
But
and
sour
I think
mix out of a gun is so much more convenient, Audrey.
And delicious.
So much more disgusting, isn't it, though? Gee, have you ever looked at the cup that nozzle goes into?
Yeah.
And can you think about how many bars don't clean it?
Yeah, exactly.
All right, no. I mean, not only that, but then there's a gas mix. And I'm not saying, there are a lot of places that, that works for. You know, a shot in a beer bar, that's what they're going to utilize. But really, for us to even, something as simple as a gin fizz, you know, like gin, lemon juice, simple syrup, and topped with soda. I mean, just the freshness of the lemon juice and the fact that the soda is clean. And a lot of times what you get from a gun is the blend of gas is not balanced. So you might wind up getting a lot more syrup and then you do actual soda, and it becomes really sweet. And a lot of times you do something like even just a gin and tonic out of a gun, the tonic is so sugar-laden that the soda goes flat.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just really important. And not only that, it's just I would rather have my soda out of a 10-ounce bottle. It's clean, it's fresh, I know it's sanitary, and I know that the pour spat has not been anywhere that, you know, I would want to go.
Right. You wouldn't put your finger in where that place
where
they holster the soda
goes. Yeah,
gun, so.
Not unless I had a big rubber glove on.
Sounds like an exam.
Anyway, yes.
I'm leaving.
But
that's it. I'm leaving the room.
All right, you leave the room. But I'm going to tell you, getting back to, like, the bar, the artisan bar, I mean, we try to do things that are, I mean, we try to create drinks that are user-friendly. We want people, sure, we have a lot of cocktail aficionados that come into the bar, but we also have a lot of first-time people who are really curious about the bar, you know, and it can be a little intimidating if you look behind a bar and you don't see anything you recognize. You know, we have a shelf of rye, a shelf of gin, you know, a shelf of various Amati, and people are like, well, what's that? And, oh, my God, you know, my drink's not going to be good because I don't recognize any of those bottles.
And it's
really just about, you know, when you talk about artisan, you're talking about, you know, just basic balance in a cocktail the way it would be balanced in a dish. You know, you use too much salt and it's ruined. You know, you use too much too much spice, it's ruined. So it's really all about balance and, you know, and starting with a classic foundation.
Audrey, I want to talk about your shelf of bitters.
Okay.
I mean,
talk to us about bitters.
What do you need all those bitters for? Come on now.
All right. Well, we've got bitters and then we've got tinctures.
Mm-hmm.
All right. So we've got lots and lots of bitters. And bitters are fabulous because bitters in any drink will add a layer of complexity. Angostura bitters, for example, I always like to refer to them as like the holiday bitters because they're produced in Trinidad, and we think about Trinidad and the Caribbean and the Spice Islands. Nutmeg, clove, allspice, cinnamon, and that is really all of those wonderful holiday spices encompass Angostura. So if you have a cocktail that's too sweet, put a dash of Angostura in, right. and it dries it down and pushes the flavor forward.
I just want to clarify for our listeners that Angostura bitters are the bitters that most of the bars that you've gone to. That's if somebody gives you bitters and soda in a classic bar or puts bitters in one of your drinks, chances are it's Angostura.
Yeah.
It is the brand name Angostura bitters.
Yeah, and I talk about Angostura because it's probably the most accessible. I mean, you can go into your supermarket and many times you'll find Angostura on the shelves as well. And it's, you know, a great stomach settler. But bitters for all intents and purposes, they're alcoholic bases with various herbs and spices steeped in them.
And what's a tincture as opposed to...
All right, so for us, I mean, Jerry, all right, now we go back to the books. And we can go back to 1862 and Jerry Thomas, who wrote the first cocktail book ever called The Bon Vivant's Companion. And my tinctures are nothing new. Jerry Thomas was doing tinctures in the 1860s, and basically they're single notes, meaning like a liquid spice rack. Many people are doing flavored syrups, and while I think flavored syrups are great and they're a step in the right direction, why do we necessarily have to be beholden to sugar? We can add sugar into a recipe separately by adding simple syrup, but if we just want to add a dash of cinnamon or a dash of pepper, then why don't we, everybody is doing vodka infusions.
Mm-hmm.
So let's do exactly that. Let's make a vodka infusion, but let's make it a concentrate, and let's use spice instead of fruit. So that whole liquid spice rack that you see behind the bar, so one is allspice, one is bay leaf, one is clove, one is coriander. And I think the idea was really to reintroduce that. A lot of new bartenders are petrified to work with bitters because the very word bitter connotes bitter. And,
right.
you know, they don't want to make their drink bitter. And I think for a lot of beginning bartenders, if they see something that says tincture of cinnamon, they're going to feel a lot more comfortable saying, you know what, I'd love a dash of cinnamon in my cocktail.
Less
and like sure. And like cooking, if you start to, you know, we don't want just juice and fruit in our cocktails. And the whole idea of creating these tinctures was to be able to move into depth and complexity and really be able to, you know, I mean, while I do, and I'm a big fan of bitters, but I like the idea of my being able to say, you know what, I'm going to create my own spice blend in this drink.
You know,
and I can make it this one different than that one by maybe this one is just bay leaf and black pepper, and maybe the other one is clove and star anise. So I think it's really just, you know, more tools.
You know, I think that I want to point out one thing. While you will see tinctures when you go into the Pegu Club behind the bar, if you want a cocktail made with vodka, you ask for it and they keep it under the bar like it were a porno magazine. You have to ask for vodka. Why such a low esteem for vodka in cocktails?
You know, it's just not, I think vodka is a great base for tinctures, but, you know, but let's think about that. That's exactly why I use vodka in tinctures, because I think of vodka as like a blank canvas that you paint on.
Neutral.
Yeah, and there's nothing wrong with that.
Right.
But I think that if you are an artisan bartender and, you know, or a good chef, you know your ingredients and I would frankly rather work with a medium that has a flavor profile.
You don't want to paint with clear.
Right. Yeah, exactly. I want that as lip gloss.
Yeah, yeah, nice. Well, you know, it's funny because, vodka is by definition, by BATF definition, a clear, flavorless alcoholic spirit. And so, you know, a vodka and cranberry taste like, well, cranberry. So if you don't like whiskey or gin or alcohol, I guess vodka is what you might want to use, so it doesn't taste like a drink. But
and
I mean,
you can see that. I mean, we don't fault anybody for that either. And you know what? We try to make the journey fun for people who want to come in and try cocktails. But you know, if they don't want to have a cocktail, if they want a vodka and tonic at the end of the day, that's fine too. And we don't like to make anybody feel badly or invalidate anybody for their choices.
When we come back from a short break, I want to talk about fun and the particular kind of fun that you set up and the vibe in your club, because it's very unique, and I want to ask some questions about how you got there.
Okay.
We're talking with Audrey Saunders of the Pegu Club in New York City, high priestess of the cocktail in this area. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, Central Jersey, 1450. The time is 11:45. Hi, this is Francis of Stage Left and Catherine Lombardi Restaurants, and also of The Restaurant Guys radio show. You know, one of the best things about the restaurant business is the creative side of it. Coming up with big ideas and then turning those concepts into reality is awesome. It's what I love most about what I do. But it can't stop there. If you can't communicate exactly what it is you're doing, then you'll find yourself standing alone in your dining room, just you and your big ideas. The Mardini Group can help you get your ideas across to others. The Mardini Group is a boutique graphic design firm, and they do extraordinary work. We use them, and as you know, we only use the best. Whether it's menu design, product packaging, a corporate report, promo material, a homepage, or an awesome logo for a brand new project like Catherine Lombardi, we turn to the Mardini Group. Some small business owners don't realize how important it is to have a strong visual identity. Without it, you come across as less than professional. That can cost you trust, and that lowers your bottom line. First impressions count for a lot, and that's why you need the Mardini Group. Go to restaurantguysradio.com and click on the Mardini Group link, or call them at 718-694-9944. The Mardini Group for graphic design, 718-694-9944.
Central Jersey Talk Radio, Central Jersey 1450, WCTC with the Restaurant Guys. Call them now at 732-545-9282. 732-545-9282.
Hey, everybody, welcome back. You're listening to the Restaurant Guys. Mark and Francis of Stage Left at Catherine Lombardi Restaurants in downtown New Brunswick. Our guest today is a friend, Audrey Saunders. Audrey is one of the preeminent cocktailians in the country, and her club is called the Pegu Club in New York City. You hear us talk about it all the time on the show because, well, I go there a lot. and you may feed all my bad habits. But, you know, as a patron and as a friend of the owner, you know, a little F-O-F-O-A, friend of Audrey, I'm there often at different times because, honestly, it's on my way. It's not too far from my house. It's about a mile and a half from my apartment in Jersey City. And so I'll stop on the way home from work and you know, have a late-night libation. So I've gotten to see the place in a number of different times. Now, this place gets written about. Frank Bruner, the New York Times restaurant critic, wrote ravingly about your place. All the food and wine writers have written about your place. I saw an interview with you on the BBC. So everybody knows about
the
it.
The coolest restaurant guys on the radio talk about you
exactly.
All the time.
And it's very much in demand. It's very much seen as one of the top cocktail places and sort of a place to be. But every time I go there, no matter how crowded or not crowded it is, people aren't going there to see and be seen, I think. It's people who are really interested in a cocktail. I mean, what do you think of the vibe at your place? And but, you know, if you're going to just look cool and be seen with a celebrity, as cool as your place is, I never get that vibe there.
We don't promote that.
How do you keep it from happening?
I don't know. I think, you know, I think it's we – that's who we are collectively, like as a staff, as a team,
mm-hmm.
We're all really low key, you know, mm-hmm. And you know, even with the celebrities that we've had come in, we try to give them like you know, maybe perhaps a table in the back. We don't want that. I mean, we're not looking to promote that because that's not who we are. We're not that sort of club where it's like, oh wow, I saw blah, I saw so and so there on Saturday night, and that must be a cool place. And, you know, people wind up going to a place because they've heard that such and such a person was there. And then it doesn't become about our art. It becomes about that.
Mm-hmm.
It's one of the reasons why I love being on the second floor. It's discreet, mm-hmm. And basically people who are into cocktails will find us.
But, Audrey, last Saturday I saw Audrey Saunders there, so I knew it was a cool place.
You saw her in service, I imagine.
All right, you know what else I want to share with you? Talk about people who are really into cocktails and smart will be able to find us. First time Mark met me at the Pegu Club, he kept calling me on my cell phone saying, it's where? I walked by there. I didn't see that door. What are you talking about?
That's I'm in right. Some bakery. What's going on?
Yeah. That's one of the reasons why we actually like to have... You know, when you pass by a club, you know, and you're out and about, and you see the doorman standing outside in front, you know, and it's, you know, and he's just larger than life,
mm-hmm.
We have our doorman stand inside.
Mm-hmm.
And if somebody approaches us, well, then he'll open the door from the inside. But we're just not looking to attract that attention because that's, again, it's not who we are. We're really about the art of what we do. And, you know, it's Friday, Saturday night, you know, people are having a great time. They're out, you know, and, you know, they've worked a hard week, and, you know, they want to experience the same way that people who come on Tuesday nights do. And you know what? It doesn't matter who you are. I mean, if you're into like a really, you know, nice, relaxed, you know, more adult atmosphere, then come by. But we're not a techno club. We're not that. So, you know, very, very specifically, I don't do promotions. You know, I don't do any sort of, you know, linking, and we don't want our name out there. It's like, oh, they use this. We just try to keep it as low-key as we can, but again, you know, collectively, that's who each one of the staff members is. We're really low-key about what we do. We take a lot of pride in our work, and we don't need to go on about it. And I think because we're low-key, you know, I think that our guests get that, and frankly, I think that's what they're looking for.
Audrey, you know how we knew that for sure?
How?
Because, well, you're our friend, and we had to ask you four times to come on the radio.
Now, where was I going with this? I had Mark threw me there for just a moment.
It's, well, you know what I mean. Here's the other thing. It's like, you know, I mean, it's really, I mean, it really is a compliment to us, you know, that everybody, you know, has been so nice and, you know, has written like so many great things about us. And, you know, whatever the magazine or whatever, we bring it in and we put it down on the back table and everybody get it, you know, they get a chance to look at it. But then, you know what? The next day we put it up on the shelf and we go back to work. And that's just really, you know, I mean, I think that if you start focusing on the fact that you've been written here and there and you focus on that, then you lose your fastball and you lose the reason why you started.
Right, then people will stop writing about you.
Yeah, you know, because then it becomes about the next story rather than, oh, wow, I came up with this fabulous flavor combination.
Except
you know,
I walk into your place and it's gorgeous. I mean, it's just beautiful and it feels like it's been there for 50 years. You know,
yeah.
It feels like, from the day it opened, it feels like it's been there for a long time.
Yeah.
And that vibe that we were talking about earlier, that vibe that you're working on creating, you know, if you want to be an of-the-moment place, and with your room, you could be an of-the-moment, you know...
Theme park?
The hippest place to be.
No.
But it's a theme park, and what happens is, eventually that wears a little thin, and that those places last for 1, 2, 3, 5 years. Is your plan to be there for a long, long time and become a New York institution?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think that, you know, when you see theme parks, it's, you know, as you said, you know, it's a few years and then it's out, but because it's, you know, they're... While I do understand that it's really important, I mean, and atmosphere is very, very important... But, you know, I think sometimes people create such grandiose spaces that it's about the space and there's no substance,
mm-hmm.
There's no content. And for us, I mean, the whole idea of creating such an understated space was to allow, you know, was to allow the staff and the cocktails and the food to speak for itself.
You know, our guest today is Audrey Saunders. She owns the Pegu Club in New York City. She is the high priestess of cocktails in New York right now and a friend of ours. And her place, you can find, if you're going to be in or around New York, you can find a link to it on our website, restaurantguysradio.com. We'll be talking more with her in just a moment. You are listening to The Restaurant Guys, Central Jersey, 1450. The time is 11:55. Hey, everybody. Welcome back. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys. Mark and Francis, stage left in Capitol. Grand old time here, talking with our friend Audrey Saunders, owner of the Pegu Club in New York City, which is probably the center of gravity of the cocktail in New York right now, and we're happy to have her. Now, we're out here in the city. I think anything that where people look more seriously at cocktails and bartenders trying to make cocktails is great and going in the right direction.
I love people how people's eyes open when they've had like a real cocktail.
Well, but here's what we battle. We get a lot of people who come in who go to cocktail bars or martini bars all the time, and then they come in and they have like a stone sour made with egg white, and they're like, what? You know, or they have a Brooklyn cocktail made with you know, the right ingredients, maraschino and amare picon. And what is your take? Have you seen these cocktail bars, these martini bars that are growing up around the country where they're like apple pucker martinis and blue martinis and
mango guava pineapple blah chai teeny blah blah blah?
Yeah.
It's exhausting. I can't even get through the title. I think really just start with a good gin sour, you know, and then you can build on that. Something just, or, you know, I mean, gin sour, you know.
But do you
lemon juice simple syrup, top with champagne, you've got a French 75, top with club soda, or, you know what, put a little bit of apricot in there, you know, and change out. You know, we think less is more, and we think that really, like, the best cocktails are built on classic foundations. And I think that if you're going to go and create a 75 recipe cocktail list, then they should come from the basics. It's like cooking. It's like building on a roux sauce.
Yep. It's like cooking, and with a lot.
You've got to get the roux sauce right, though.
And with a lot of these places that. Have, you know, the martini bars that have the blue martini, the watermelon martini, the orange martini, the red martini, the purple martini. Look, if you had a chef that made all their food all out of squeeze bottle sauces that they bought from a major food company versus a chef that makes their food out of stuff they get from a farm, you're going to have better food one way or the other. Hey, Audrey, we're coming to the end of the show. We got to go, but I want to thank you for coming and talking with us on the show.
Oh, thank you. It was my pleasure.
Thanks, Audrey.
And I'm coming to your place tonight after work. See you about 2 o'clock in the morning.
I will see you there.
All right, take care. Thanks
right.
a lot.
Bye.
That's Audrey Saunders. She owns the Pegu Club in New York City. You can find out about it by going to our website, restaurantguysradio.com.
The very first thing you need to do is squeeze your own juices.
Yeah, and the very first thing I need to do is go get them to make me a cocktail. So, and you will often see me there, so if you hear someone with a familiar voice, don't be afraid to tap me on the shoulder. Hope you've enjoyed the hour listening to The Restaurant Guys. I'm Francis Schott.
And I'm Mark Pascal.
We are The Restaurant Guys, Central Jersey, 1450. The time is 12 noon.